Okay. So yesterday we started sugya number 9. We started with a statement of Shmuel. The discussion was if a minor girl accepts a kedushin without her knowledge, and when the father hears about it, he's subsequently silent. So we're not sure if her kedushin is a valid kedushin or not. So therefore, how would she get out of this relationship if she'd want to marry someone else? So Shmuel said she has to receive a get, and she must perform miyun, which is a declaration that she does not desire a husband, which retroactively nullifies the marriage rabbinically. Karna took exception to that and said it doesn't make any sense. If you have a get, that means she was biblically married, so miyun is of no help. And if she needs miyun, that means she wasn't biblically married, she doesn't need a get. Anyway, they wanted to say, well, go find out from Rav what's the story. And to make sure Rav was honest, they switched the names of Shmuel and Karna. And still yet, Rav ruled like Shmuel and could not believe that Shmuel would say such a thing. So now we have Rav and Shmuel both saying, on this case, that if a girl accepts a kedushin without her father's knowledge, she needs get and miyun. Now we want to know what was the reason. So if Acha Brei de Rav Ika gave us the reason, we're on point 5. She needs a get because maybe the father indeed consented to the kedushin. So therefore, it comes out it was a good kedushin. Why does she need miyun? Because for us to be sure that perhaps maybe there was no marriage. Because what if the father did not consent? Well, then if he didn't consent, you don't need a get. No, but the problem being, what if the fellow who married this minor turns around and marries the minor's sister? If you recall. And if he married the minor's sister, and there's no, and if there's a get, given, or if the get was given, they'll think she was Mikudeshes. The first sister was Mikudeshes. And therefore the second sister, even after you divorce the first sister, cannot be Makadosh, or it's no Kiddushin. And they're going to think that the second sister is an unmarried woman. And then another guy will come in and marry her. And the truth of the matter is that very much could be that there was a problem. Maybe the first sister was not married and the second sister was married. And now you can be living with a woman who's a married woman. So what do? So we make her give miyun so people will see there's something amiss and they're going to start asking questions. They're going to say, you know, there's something going on with this family. Can you tell me what the story is? I never saw such thing with a get and a miyun. Says, well, you know, we really don't know if the first sister got married. And the truth is, we really don't know if the other guy was married to the second sister. And we're going to force the second guy to give a get misafek to the second sister to make sure that she's fully not married to that fellow. So really, the miyun is not necessary, really, really. But to avoid future problems, we have the miyun. So really what comes out is, we're not sure if the man is married to the girl. So to be cover our bases, in case the father was agreeable to it, we give the get. It's a suffix. But maybe really there never was a need for the get. So therefore we do a miyun, and now we realize that there's problems with this original marriage that we're not clear about. And therefore that will make us think twice about if the guy marries the fellow sister to require a definite get out of suffix for the second sister as well.
So we do the miyun as a warning sign.
Yes.
Other people stay away from the sister because we're not sure.
Yes, yes, yes.
If the rabbi just say to this guy, you may have married the sister, so you have to give her a get to the original guy, then once she gets her get, she's okay to anybody.
Well, again, you're right to the second sister. You're saying second?
Yeah, so
you're right, but that's in a perfect world. What happens if the second guy gave her a kiddushin and leaves the country?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you know, you have to calculate, you know, where reasonable, or the guy says, I don't want to divorce her. Right? And then they'll say, well, you're really not married to her anyway. So, therefore, you know, we have to do things to, be proactive, to not have to come on to this man, doing what he's doing with the second sister. That's what, to be proactive. You want to disengage from this first woman? We require both things right off the bat. So it's no matter what the second guy does, if he gives the kiddushin but then refuses to give a get, we'll still avoid potential problems. You gotta remember the Avera of Eishes Ish is a very strict Avera. We have to do what we can to be proactive to not allow that to happen. You have husbands who'll say, you know what, I'm not giving her a get. Finished.
But it could be any situation.
So to the degree that the rabbis can be proactive, we are. Only to the degree that they can be. So when you're talking about a case where a get was given, and we don't know if it really was a get or not, especially with a young girl over here, so therefore we require miyun. And now, once we have the miyun, now there could be no problems afterwards. Because everyone's going to, it's such an unusual thing. You know, people look at Shidduchim, they're going to say, what's going on? How come the sister got a get and a miyun? What's going on over there? Because I'm curious, because the second sister got married, and she hasn't had a get. Is she really married or not? So then we go and explain the whole issue. If they only see the get, everyone's going to figure for sure the second kiddushin isn't valid at all. They won't ask any questions. You know, a man has his eye on a girl. Okay, you got to remember that the drive for lust is very strong. A man has an eye on sister number two. He's watching history unfold that Mr. A marries sister one, and then he sees he gives her a divorce, and then he married her and gives her a divorce, and then he goes and marries the second sister. He says, what a chutzpah, that guy married her. I had my eye on her the whole time. Yeah, well, you know, he really, the kedusha wasn't good anyway, because he married the first sister anyway, and he just goes, rushes in to marry her. It's not unusual situations at all. And therefore, if we force that the get and the miyun have to happen, all of a sudden guys will go, whoa, something's very strange over here. I better find what's going on. Okay, the rabbi said it could be she's still married. She never was married to the first guy. Okay, now we got a problem. She could be married to the second guy, so I got to stay away. That's what the miyun basically screams out and says, everyone stay away from the second sister.
Okay, what's the status of the girls?
At which point?
At this point. When the first one got that get and Amiyun,
So the first lady is, she totally can get married, but she cannot marry a Kohen. Because it could be she is, really was divorced.
Right.
So they can't marry a Kohen. The second girl who got the Kiddushin would need a get as well. And it's a suffix if she was married to the second guy. And she could marry somebody else, but could not marry a Kohen.
Okay.
And couldn't marry any of that fellow's certain relatives. You have to be strict on both sides for both girls. Perhaps they were married, perhaps they weren't married to this fellow. And therefore, you have to be strict on both ends. Perhaps she, well, on one, if she was married, then there'll be certain relatives of his that she'd be prohibited to. She'd be prohibited to a Kohen, but at least she does have a bona fide divorce, and now she could remarry, and would treat her as a divorcee. And if a guy wanted to give her a ksuba, he would say, I'm only going to give you 100, because I'm going to treat you like a divorcee. But at least we're not going to have anybody living with a married woman, and that's the most important thing. Okay. Now, so far, so good. Now, is going to come along Rabbi Nachman, and it's going to qualify this statement that both Rav and Shmuel say that if a minor accepts a kiddushin, we must have a get and a miyun. So now he's going to qualify that that situation is not under every circumstance where a girl receives a kiddushin. It's only under one particular circumstance, which you'll see the circumstance makes a lot of sense. Amar Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman rules, qualifies the psak of Rav and Shmuel that says it has to be get and miyun, that the case is speaking where what happened before the man gave her the girl the kiddushin, it's where the father was involved up to this point. Vehu, and we're speaking Shishadchu. The Shidduch has already been spoken about between this man and this girl. Okay? However, right? In other words, the father was called up. You know, I'm interested in your daughter. Let's start talking about possibility of getting married. And the father's talking and they've been in the discussion stage. There's no surprise over here. And it seems that the father says, yeah, you know, I could hear that it's going to work. And I think I'm going to give you my verbal approval. Okay, that's what's called shidduchim. That's where the word shidduch, shishidchu, the match that previously been made. So, look at note 24. Shmuel meant his law to apply only when the betrother had previously spoken to the father of marrying his daughter and the father consented to the idea. Here, there's a reason to believe that the father might have acquiesced when hearing that his daughter accepted Kiddushin on her own. And thus Shmuel rules that she must receive a bill of divorce before marrying anyone else. When, however, a match with the couple had not previously been proposed, there's no reason to suspect that the father acquiesced when hearing of the daughter's action, and thus neither a bill of divorce nor mian will be required. That's a huge qualification that was just made over here. Now all the hemming and hawing and how to answer your questions has been reduced greatly. In other words, Rav and Shul just had a simple, cryptic statement. A woman, a katana, accepts a kedusha from the man. The father hears about it and says, what's the halacha? Get and mian. So Rav Nachman said, qualified, said, listen, you should know when they said get and mian. He says, that's because the father already had consented. Now consented, but there's no legal transaction happened yet. Father said, okay, I agree. You can go get married to my daughter. And then what he's supposed to do is say, okay, dad, here's money, here's something, let's make the kinyan. He didn't make the kinyan with the father. He went straight to the girl and made the kinyan. Okay? So now there's reason to believe the father would accept it. However, I guess we'll have to add in beneath the line, so what do you need the mian for? There's reason to believe maybe the father was a little bit upset. What do you mean? Why didn't you give me the kiddushin? Or maybe, you know, the fact you didn't give it to the father, maybe that's, it's lacking in the fact you didn't give it directly to the father. Right? Now, let's see. In commenting on the case where a match was proposed, Rashi states that the father indeed acquiesced to the daughter's kiddushin, the betrothal would take effect retroactively. I mean, the minor would be considered married as of the moment she received the kiddushin, not as of the father's acquiescence. Okay, in other words, it comes out of this. The guy went to the father and said, I want to marry your daughter. He says, fine, good. Now he goes right to the daughter. And then when the father hears about it, we assume he acquiesced. So then the marriage takes place when the guy gave it to the girl. Okay. So I'm not going to go more into that, but that's what he's saying. Let's do that again. Okay. If there was no arrangement made, the kiddushin, it would be totally nothing. So that's the qualification. Until now, we were saying, well, maybe the father didn't hear about it. Maybe he would agree. Maybe he wouldn't agree when he finds out. We're not talking about that. Rav Nachman clearly is saying that Rav and Shlomo are only speaking where the father already agreed in advance. And now you're giving it to the girl without telling the father you gave it to the girl. Now the question is, do we assume that the father's okay with that and it works out as a good kiddushin? Or will we still think maybe it wouldn't work because after all, he wasn't the one who got it? But certainly if there was no discussion with the father at all, Rav Nachman was explaining Rav and Shmuel, there'd be absolutely nothing. All right, so that really changes the whole appearance of everything.
There's no get or mian
required. If the father was not, according to this explanation, Rav and Shmuel was saying, if the father didn't know anything about it, nothing, because the girl totally acted on her own.
No kiddushin.
Right? So, and there's no reason to think a father would acquiesce to that. However, if you made a shidduch with him before it, and he consented to the idea, then she got it. There's good reason to assume, okay, he balaidic me. He didn't give a go right to me. But still, I already said it's good. I think it's good. Fine, so it's good. But on the other hand, we could say no. But since we're going to say it's a doubt, though, you know, there's reason to assume he acquiesced, but then there's still reason to maybe think he didn't acquiesce, and therefore you need the mian, because maybe they weren't married. But if the father wasn't told at all about anything, there's no assumption that he would have acquiesced at all.
Isn't it fair to assume it's Rabban gave his consent to the shidduch conceptually anyways, that therefore...
Yeah, but, you know, so then why didn't you go give me the money?
So he gave her the money, but knowing that the father was okay with it, so why don't we just rule it's a good condition? Well,
because, you know, again, people are... Wait till you marry off your daughter. You'll know what I'm talking about. Wait till, not you. You won't be like that. But I'm just saying. Well, you know, you agree, Darsh get married. Now you start dealing with the chutanim, and all of a sudden they don't start living up to their parts of the deals. Yeah. You know, then you have people say, you know, the shidduch's off. You know, yeah, it's a nice boy. Then all of a sudden you see this not so good. The guy, you agree? Listen,
I
agreed, married her. So why didn't you give me the money? What kind of son-in-law are you? Already starting up?
Yeah.
You know, I changed my mind.
Yeah.
I don't agree. I agreed that you marry her. Do it in a mensch way. Give me the money.
Yeah.
Now you want to give it to my daughter? What kind of son-in-law are you? I'm not interested anymore. Because just because you agree in advance, the fact is when the girl gets it, it has to be that we know the father was happy that she got it. So if the father agreed in advance, we'd assume he'd be happy, even if he wasn't given directly. But there's enough reason to assume he might not be happy because he didn't do with him. That's the doubt. Only then is there a doubt, explains Rav Nachman in Rav and Shmuel's statements. If the father was surprised by all this, we don't assume he would ever retroactively be agreeable to this. This is the qualification of Rav Nachman. Okay, so now we've got a statement of Rav and Shmuel. We got the qualification of Nachman. Now we're going to have, coming up now, two versions of the following statement coming up of Ula.
Shmuel and Rav.
No. Everything we have now is exact. Like Rav and Shmuel said a statement which could have been misinterpreted.
Right.
Rav Nachman came along and he qualified. He said the only time we have this doubt is when the father was discussed and said agreed in advance. Then we have a doubt. If the father was not discussed in advance, there's no doubt nothing happened at all. Now comes on Ula. Ula makes a statement, and there's two versions the Gemara is going to bring. One version is going to be that Ula's statement was to argue on Rav and Shmuel. The second statement was, he just said it on his own, had nothing to do with Rav and Shmuel. Okay? But we're going to see that it comes out there is going to be an argument between Ula and Rav and Shmuel, but the question is, what is he exactly arguing on? That's what's coming down the pike now. Now, the first version has a very cryptic version of Ula's statement, and it appears that Ula is directly going on the statement of Rav and Shmuel. Now, the problem is going to be like this. We're going to tell you Ula's statement of disagreement. But if we now have Rav Nachman's qualification of Rav and Shmuel, you're going to see in a minute, it's going to be hard to understand why Ula's arguing on them. So we'll see. Just hang on. The first line, when I say it, you're going to wince and say, that doesn't make any sense. Why is he arguing? The Gemara is going to, right away, bring the question. We're going to have to discuss how this is going to happen. This is where it gets tricky here. This is the tricky couple lines over here. Ula Amar. Ula says, now you're going to see, now we know that Ula does argue on Rav and Shmuel. That's true. But we're not exactly sure to what extent he's going to argue. We're not sure unless his statement was directly said about Rav and Shmuel's statement as a direct argument, or he said a general statement. And then, even though he may argue, it may not be as strongly. So look what Ula says. Now, Rav and Shmuel said in this case that you have to have get and miyun. Get and miyun. Look what Ula says. Amar, afilu miyun ein tzricha. You don't even need miyun. Now, what does that mean? All right, doesn't even need to perform miyun. Now, look how the commentary here says this. So here the commentary says, for it is certain that the kedusha was invalid.
Does it base that on what?
Just
I'm just telling you what he says right now. All of a sudden, bells are going off. He says it's absolutely zippo. It's garnished, McGarnished. You don't even need a mean. Nothing. No get, no mean. The father's a dang it, garnished.
Wow.
To which the Gemara jumps. Wait a minute, if we just heard Rav Nachman qualify the statement of Rav and Shmuel, and said it, Rav and Shmuel only said the statement when the father in advance agreed, And now you're going to tell me that Ula argues on that position, Rav and Shmuel, the way Rav Nachman qualified it? The Gemara says, Afal Gav Deshivko? You're going to say, Ula argues even though the match had previously been arranged between the father and the fellow? At least in that case, we should be concerned that the father would want the marriage to happen. What are you telling me? He's going to, and we know the way it's worded. See, if Ula makes just a word, says, even means not required. It means he didn't even give us the whole case.
Yeah.
In which Rabbi Shul says, if a girl gets a kiddushin from a man without the father's knowledge, now they need to get an immune. Now, Shmuel didn't say, if a girl gets a kiddushin without her father's knowledge, she doesn't even need miyun. Didn't say that. He just said one line. She doesn't even need miyun. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
She didn't even know. Obviously, he was directly responding to the Rav and Shmuel statement, because he didn't even say the case. Do you understand? What words do we have? Let's back it up. Ula said, oh, these are the only words we have.
Yeah.
Ula says, she doesn't even need meal. What are you talking about? What's the case? What's going on? Must be he's responding to a statement that's out there already. Because we don't even know what the case. He didn't say the case.
Yeah.
Do you understand? So if he didn't say the case, must be he was responding to somebody who was out there already. What's that? Rav and Shmuel's statement. That if the girl got the condition without the father's knowledge, he was silent afterwards, you need to get meal. And now he says, doesn't even need a meal. So he's clearly arguing on Rav and Shmuel. Clearly arguing. Now, if we did not have Rav Nachman's qualification, then we could epiphanagle over here. Because without Rav Nachman's qualification, we didn't know anything about Shiduchim. Well, then we could say, you know, Rav and Shmuel said maybe the father would agree. Well, Rav Ul could say, no, I don't think the father would agree at all. And I could hear a good argument because who says the father agreed in advance? Right? We didn't know that till 15 minutes ago. So till 50 minutes ago, we thought Rav and Shmuel said their statement, even the father didn't know anything, was surprised. And still thought, well, maybe the father will agree. To that I could hear Ula saying, I disagree with that completely. Father's totally surprised, he doesn't agree at all. I could hear that as a machlokes. If I would have started today's lesson with Ula's statement and Rav Nachman, would you guys have had any problems?
No.
If I would have skipped
yeah.
Rav Nachman's qualification.
Yeah.
So, and I would have just brought you Ula. Would you have any problems?
No.
You'd say, I understand the machlokes. Rav and Shmuel thought maybe the father agrees, even though he didn't know about it, but maybe the father agrees. And Ula said, no, father would not agree. He didn't know about it. But now that we've started the lesson with Rav Nachman's qualification, that he said, they only said it's get and mean because the father agreed in advance. And if Ula's going to be arguing on that, that doesn't make any sense. And that's worth asking. Abba God, the Shivko, you mean to say even when the father agreed in advance, Ula would be so lenient to say that nothing happened and you don't need anything? At least in that case, right? Look at the notes. According to Rav Nachman, who qualified it, Shmuel required a bill of divorce mean only when a match had previously been arranged between the brother. I don't know all these fellow typos over here. Betrother. I'm sorry. I know why he always makes those hyphens. Well, between the betrothed and the minor, okay, i.e. when the man who betrothed the minor was someone the father agreed should be her husband. Thus, since Ula's statement that, quote, not even a meal is required, was apparently intended as a rejoinder to Shmuel's ruling, it seems that it too was meant to apply when a case had been arranged. Morris says that doesn't seem to make sense. Okay, now you're not going to like this answer. He's going to say, well, you have to say like this, that the fellow who is quoting Ula didn't hear about Rav Nachman's statement. And he thinks that Rav and Shmuel never said it the way Rav Nachman said it. Okay, man demasniha, anyone who teaches us that Ula's statement is learnt going on as a machlokes to Rav and Shmuel, anybody who teaches us that Ula is arguing the way we just understood it, Lo Masniha, he did not teach the teaching of Rav Nachman's qualification. In other words, what do you have? You have Rav and Rav Shmuel made a statement. He made a statement. Rav Nachman came along and qualified it. Okay? Now, maybe not everybody agrees with Rav Nachman's qualification. Rav Nachman qualified it. Others say, you know, I don't agree with your qualification. Okay, Rav Nachman can certainly hold. He's entitled to his opinion. He makes a qualification. Now we have a statement of Ula. Now, there are those who taught us that Ula came to argue on Shmuel.
Right.
Those who say that Ula came to argue on Shmuel do not subscribe to Rav Nachman's qualification. Therefore, there's a machlokes as to what the machlokes is. Again, what are the facts we cannot deny? Shmuel said a statement. He said a statement, for Grugitz a Kedushin without the father's knowledge, and he's silent afterwards, you have to give a get in the miyun. That's for sure what Shmuel said, and Rav agrees to it. We don't know the precise circumstances of that case, though. They weren't said. Now, according to this version now about Ula, somebody got up and said, the way I understand my Torah is that Ula, everyone knew that Ula had something to say about this topic. This first fellow said, Ula came to argue on Shmuel. And he said, Shmuel, you say get me in, I say nothing. So that fellow clearly is learning that Ula is very strongly arguing on Shmuel. Now, the question is, well, what is he arguing about what Shmuel said? Now comes along Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman, who's just learning Shmuel, says, I just want you guys to know, when Shmuel made a statement, he'd get and miyun, that's only when the father agreed in advance. If the father did not agree in advance, he never would require anything. I'm qualifying a statement. So Rav Nachman's entitled to qualify that statement. He feels that's Shmuel's position. The rabbi who quotes Ula as arguing on Shmuel, he will disagree with Rav Nachman's analysis of Shmuel. He's going to say, Shmuel didn't say it only when they talked. No, Shmuel was speaking where they did not discuss Shidduchim before. When they did not discuss Shidduchim, now Rav Nachman's going to legitimately argue. Says, why should she need a get an immune? I don't think anything happened. Right? And clearly Rav Nachman, if indeed there was a discussion before, then Ula wouldn't argue either. Ula wouldn't argue either. So therefore, the one who learns this doesn't learn that. In other words, the one who learns that Ula is directly arguing on Rav and Shmuel did not learn Rav Nachman's qualification of Shmuel. Not didn't know, didn't even agree.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
In other words, what did Shmuel actually say? You know what? There's a debate what he exactly said. But we ended yesterday, we figured we didn't know anything about the father talking about Shidduchim. We just said, you know, maybe it's Christian. We said, why? Well, maybe the father will agree afterwards, and then it's going to be retroactively okay. And then the guy who says, you know what? And I say Ula argues on that. Very good. He argues that because I say he won't decide afterwards it's okay. Fine. Now you got a good machlokas. When the father doesn't know anything about it, does it require Gitter, Mir, or nothing? Right? Comes along Rav Nachman, he qualified Shmuel's statement. Listen, Shmuel only said there's a problem if the father agreed in advance. If the father didn't agree in advance, he wouldn't say there's any possibility. Now that, the one who says that Ular's arguing, he doesn't have that interpretation of Nachman, because if he would have the interpretation, Ula wouldn't be arguing. Right? So it's not, you understand, if you're saying there's an argument, they're only arguing how far do we say Shmuel's statement goes? Do we say Shmuel's statement where we're in doubt is only when the father knows about it in advance? Do we have this doubt? But if he didn't know, there's no doubt at all. There's no question. There's nothing. Or do we say his statement was said even if there was no discussion in advance? And even then there's still a doubt.
That's where the doubt is.
Right? So there's a debate. So Rav Nachman is clearly saying, no, I learned Shmuel this way. He will only say that it's a doubt if there was an agreement beforehand. Well, if Rav Nachman was learning that way, there's no way you could say Ula's going to argue on that statement. Because if the father agreed in advance, you got to say there's at least a doubt.
Yeah.
At least there's, how could Ula say there's nothing, should be nothing? That's what he's asking. Because, well, the rabbi who learned that Ula's arguing did not learn Rav Nachman's qualification. So at this point, either you're going to say like this, either you're going to say, the one who learned Ula to argue on Shmuel is going to say, the way I understood Shmuel is that it's a shidduch, even with no, it's a doubt, even there was no discussion beforehand. And Ula's come and argue on that. Now, Rav Nachman said, no, Shmuel only said a statement of doubt when the father was discussed. And on that, doesn't seem Ula would come to argue on that statement. So the one who says Ula argues on Rav does not learn the qualification of Rav Nachman. Okay? Got that?
Yeah, so where does that leave us now?
It leaves us with a debate as to what Rav actually said. Now, so far, Nogel Halacha, it wouldn't matter. It wouldn't matter, Lagabe Halacha, because we're only saying Ula argues if, looks like this. If you're going to say that Ula's arguing, you're going to say that Shmuel said his statement even if the father didn't know.
Right.
So that's going to be a decent machlokes. And if the father did know, everybody agrees it's certainly a good wedding. But if you learn the way Shmuel says, well, then nobody says that the father doesn't know that it helps. So it's a machlokes. How lenient would Shmuel go?
That's why Nachman.
And if he's that lenient, then Ula would argue. If he's not that lenient, then Ula would not argue. So that's the question. So now, we thought yesterday that Shmuel said a statement, even if the father didn't know.
Yeah.
Right? Now Rav Nachman qualified and said, no, he never would say that. He'd only would say that the father knew in advance. So that's a machlokas. What did Rav Shmuel indeed say? And is there something that they said that Ula would argue or not argue on? All right, we'll stop at this point. This is version one. Tomorrow we get one line of version two, and then we get past the versions and we start asking questions on Ula.
Thank you.
Okay.